This is CliffCentral.com.
So increasingly, humanity finds itself drowning in information. We are choking in a deluge of data. We are increasingly suffering from bandwidth anxiety between our Twitter feeds and Instagram feeds and Facebook feeds. Most people talk about the fact that now we live in the attention economy. Attention is the new limited resource. Attention is the new oil. If you don't have ADD today, you're not paying attention. This is the question on everybody's minds. How do we curate what we pay attention to? How do we push aside the noise and focus on what's important? Stuart Brand used to say, science is the only news. The rest is the same he says and she says that you see in the media. And so, if I were to be talking to entrepreneurs, if I was talking to heads of companies, I would tell them, pay attention to exponentials. Pay attention to disruptive technologies. Pay attention to the progress in artificial intelligence, biotechnology, nanotechnology, right? The big three, GNR, genetics, nanotechnology, and robotics. These are the forces that are upending the world. These are the new trillion-dollar industries that are going to emerge out of no place. Think exponentially, pay attention to disruptive technology.
Hey, welcome. Was that us?
I was going to do it.
And that,
what?
Okay.
Should we try that again?
No. Guys, seriously. This was the tone of the entire interview that you went through. You know, and I had to listen to it, and I was like, this poor woman, Jaya, who was sitting there listening to you two Muppets. I mean,
love you, Brett.
Love you, Brett.
Clearly it was the last interview of the day. Giraffe sex.
Yeah, well, that's
giraffe sex.
You're just doing the cover of the magazine show that we're about to listen to at Singularity.
Exactly.
So there is mention of giraffe sex.
I
can't remember the context just
yet. Where was it? Giraffe sex and fist. What's it?
Bro fisting.
which actually, and cremazing.
Crazy. Oh, there we go. So, Jaya, next time we do an interview, I will do it. This is Michael speaking. I never met you.
And you'll be bored because we've set the bar so high with random crazy.
random crazy. But welcome back to the next session here on the Singularity. I mean, it's been a fantastic series so far, guys. I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
I've loved it.
It's been the highlight of my futurology career.
So, is Vivian Ming on your personal wall?
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt.
Right?
She's power.
She's your superstar, right?
She's power. Look, you know what? There were a couple of that were really power. I mean, we're going to listen to Jaya just now. I mean, her presentation was absolutely mind-blowing.
On quantum security.
It was absolutely phenomenal. So, it was absolutely incredible. So,
I think Mike is completely taken back here.
I am.
Vivian?
You really missed out on Jaya Baloo's.
Look, I saw her presentation. I'm sorry I didn't get to chat to her. I mean, we got so tied up on the first day that she got shuffled over to the next day, clearly.
But we were sitting there. I mean, everybody's reaction to Jaya's presentation was amazing. I think
absolutely.
Even Jaya enjoyed her presentation. It was that good.
But you know what? I think Jaya's one of those people who's just got a zest for life.
Yeah.
I mean, she's just got an energy that. It's a huggable energy, man. It's a bro-fisting energy, bro. Yeah,
bro-fisting.
There you go.
Totally.
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 But we're not starting with Jaya, are we?
No. We're going to start with Dr. Divya Chanda.
Who you happen to call Miss.
I asked her if it was Miss, and you get it.
In your dreams, Brett.
Wow, I don't know. My hallucinations, maybe.
That's where
my
I'm going.
LSD, ayahuasca type there we trip go. That we're talking about. And she's talking about how it's not all about whether or not the technology is going to overrun the humanity within us or whether or not we can do other things. And she talks about med tech, but it took a very different angle. We weren't quite ready for that discussion.
On microdosing of LSD.
Microdosing LSD was just a part of the thing that blew my brain the most. Yeah. We didn't actually do any practical
or mushrooms
things.
No, none of that.
And she was advocating this, huh?
Yeah. And the spiritual,
she wasn't
pharmaceutical, recreational things.
No, she wasn't. She wasn't selling.
I think the best thing is just to listen to what Dr. Divya Chanda has to say.
Yes. Fantastic. We'll enjoy.
Hey, you're still listening to the Futurology Show, and we are still here at the Singularity University Summit here in Johannesburg.
Boom.
And our minds are blown by all of the amazing speakers we have. But in the room with us, we have Mr. Justin Kutsia. Welcome, Justin.
And I don't have my pink jersey on.
You don't have your pink jersey on.
I think I'll survive.
You are wearing the same jersey that Brett always wears.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm trying to blend in.
What can I say? He's got great taste.
Trying to blend in.
That's good.
Become part of the crew.
But we are also graced with the presence of Ms.
Doctor.
Dr. Divya Chanda. Thank you so much. And you're from the Faculty of Medicine with the Singularity University.
I am.
And you blew everybody's mind on your med tech discussion. But that's the best I can do with explaining to everybody who you are. You can do a much better job. Tell us who you are, what you do.
I am a neuroscientist who has been interested in the problem of studying consciousness all my life. So when it was time to also pick a medical specialty, I chose anesthesiology because I get to make people unconscious for a living and then study their brains as I do.
No one ever complains when they're sleeping.
So you're like a mentalist doctor.
I thought you could call me that. Yeah, no, I'm actually studying. I all of my patients, I study their electroencephalogram as I take them under into these drug-induced states of unconsciousness, and then as I bring them back. And at the same time, I'm trying to understand which neural networks serve states of consciousness. Wow. They overlap with sleep.
Wow.
There are overlapping phenotypes. But then I also try to dissect what the brain is telling us when different drugs are given, so almost creating a data dictionary for electrical neural signals and drugs.
Wow.
And then I have a precision medicine initiative at Stanford where I'm biobanking patient data, and we're trying to see if there's a genetic basis for some of these oscillations, which actually predominate during different states of consciousness. So,
I've got a question.
We've been so excited.
Is there such a thing as a eureka epiphany moment then, or have we always had that knowledge in our heads?
Eureka about what?
Eureka about anything. They're like, how does that work? Is it something that we've always had, or is our consciousness just awakening to knowledge maybe was always there?
That's a really profound question, and maybe a bit spiritual.
Digital philosopher, sorry.
Yeah, no.
The philosopher and the neuroscience meet in the middle.
Well, so the material neuroscientist in me would say that you've somehow formed a connection to neural networks, especially the neurons that are responsible at one particular synapse, which is a junction where they talk, have started firing together. And there's an old adage by a Canadian scientist, neurons that fire together wire together.
Wow.
And so when you have these overlapping moments of profundity, often you have two networks that have been activated at the same time and have understood connections between different event stimuli or memories you've laid down. The spiritual part of me might say, well, maybe you've just tapped into this continuum that you always had access to, and you've entered a state where you've almost, it's either a hyper-conscious state or one where you've removed part of your consciousness in order to tap into that knowledge. And here I would say what's really interesting about that is, think about this, you don't see most of what's actually out there in the visual spectrum because your eyes are filtering this. You only have a couple of color photoreceptors.
Yeah.
There's a little mantis shrimp that sees so many more colors than you do because of this. Well, your brain is an equally crappy filter. In fact, you throw out most of the information that comes in. What if your brain were a consciousness filter and consciousness were more of a non-local phenomenon and all these individual brains were located in these different avatars and they were just kind of funneling down this information and making it actually smaller? And so states of meditation or when you go into a sweat lodge or you have a ayahuasca experience, what you're doing is lifting some of the filters away and tapping back into a larger flow.
Oh, gee.
So those are the two. One's a more reductionistic answer, and one is much more of a...
I love talking to doctors of stuff that they know.
I actually have a controversial question. I think it's slightly off topic at the moment. I was reading in the Harvard Business Review about the problem with microdosing LSD and the effects on the brain.
There's no problem.
It's completely off topic,
right?
But if you have
why is it a problem?
I mean, but I'm just saying, a lot of creativity, they reckon, is coming out through firing up more sensors in the brain. I mean, is that true, or is it just, guys, any excuse for a bit of LSD?
Okay. Wow, we really are off topic now.
Totally.
Very pertinent to someone who's about to go on an ayahuasca experience.
This is Dr. Divya Chanda that we're talking to on the Futurology Show. You're hearing the Pandora's box that we're opening up in the world of consciousness, and I think we need to maybe just close it again, and I'd love to have you back on the show. So we will definitely set that up, and we will open that box.
How about I say one sentence, and then we can come back to this much later. LSD is a hallucinogen. I use another drug that can cause hallucinations often in the operating room called ketamine. Mm-hmm. It was originally considered a horse tranquilizer, but that's mostly because it's injectable in addition to taking it IV. Mm-hmm. What a lot of these drugs do, these dissociative drugs, is they uncouple parts of the brain that used to be firmly wired. Mm-hmm. And then by the state of uncoupling, they allow different connections to be made. Imagine when you form a habit, right, and you lay down that network, and then it's really hard to pop out of it. In fact, as we've evolved as a species, it makes metabolic sense to keep using the same patterns over and over because you don't expend a lot of energy. Yeah. That's why it's so hard to break habits.
The mental models that we create.
Yes, absolutely.
And we see the world that the filtering you're talking about, that filtering is those mental models.
So then, now you take a drug like LSD, and what happens is the drug basically breaks this filter that you have developed and laid down so carefully over time. And that's why people say that they have almost transcendental experiences sometimes when they use dissociative drugs. And the experience stays. So you break networks and you allow some rewiring to take place.
Yep.
And so whether you're taking large doses and having these huge experiences or microdosing and maybe breaking apart some sort of smaller networks, you are changing the way the brain is organized, and that allows for different possibilities.
Wow. That is
and this is why people battle to change. So when you go into a corporate environment, why the corporate culture battles to change is exactly this. You have these mental models that have been created by the individuals. You've got careers that have been built on the back of these things.
Sure.
And I'm starting to realize I should be going into drugs.
I am not advocating.
Yeah, you're very careful.
Dr. Divya Chandra, not advocating drug use on this radio show.
Yes. I think it's trying to explain
how they might work.
We just have an ayahuasca incense is burning in every room that we go into.
That's what we're going to do. Ayahuasca tea as part of my ritual.
So back on topic. We are at the Singularity University Summit here in Johannesburg, and Dr. Divya Chanda, you gave an amazing talk, and it was jam-packed with a lot of stuff, some of which is, I'm just going to quickly run through them because we only have a short amount of time given how much we've wasted already. Medical innovation, leapfrog technology, access to medical things, whether it be hospitals or tool sets or sterile environments in rural spaces. 3D printing, supply chain, fixing through 3D printing. I'm going to go through this quickly. But you went to 3D printing of organs as well, to the point of this. Yeah. You spoke about biopens, paradigm shifting, things like microfluidics, precision medicine, bionics. All of it is amazing. And if anybody wants to know more, please, I encourage you, how can we get hold of you or find out more about the things that you're working on?
Okay, so you're reminding me that I should be setting up a regular blog.
You are depriving the world by not doing this.
There's so much to do.
It's true.
You need an assistant?
Yes. Are you offering?
Quite happy to.
What I would say is this. If there is a topic, it's actually pretty easy to find information on almost everything. It's the synthesis that's kind of difficult.
Yep.
It's a narrative and it's the framework to actually hang things on.
Yeah.
And that's what I try to do a bit in the talk, is to try to provide sort of basic frameworks so that if afterwards you're interested in induced pluripotent stem cells, you kind of know what it was.
Yeah.
And then you kind of know what it is you can actually do with induced pluripotent stem cells.
You follow the path.
Yeah, you follow the path. If you're interested in 3D printing but with stem cells versus plastics, that also gives you a completely different path to go on.
Brilliant.
But to know that these things are all possible now.
Excellent. That's great. And we're on the Futurology Show. We do a study of the future. We don't try to understand or talk about the future. We try to explore the possibilities that exist in the future. The one thing I really liked about the essence of your talk was how so many people are afraid of artificial intelligence and things replacing
humans over the world.
And robots taking over the world. But your talk was very much this assimilation, this togetherness of technology, of learning and understanding, and how we're going to use it as humans in the future. What do you feel the future is in the next 5 to 10 for us?
So here's the first thing. We touched on this a little bit in the prep. we can't stop the train of technology. Most technology is developed for good. Atomic physics was a very beautiful, positive endeavor, and we got an atomic bomb, but we also got the understanding of the atom. We would be nowhere without this.
Yeah.
A lot of our technology and bionics and brain-machine interfaces was actually developed to help people who basically had nervous system dysfunction, who were paraplegics, who had lost limbs. And you can see the incredible benefit this provides to them. But in the process, we've actually figured out ways to control robots and computers with our minds, to create electronic versions of ourselves, to meld ourselves with bionic exoskeletons. And part of the result is going to be also the development of super soldiers and humans that connect to the internet. Mm. And there's no way around any of this. So the way to deal with this kind of disruption is to actually understand that no matter what you do, it's going to happen. And if you stop the disruption, you just will create a black market or shift the disruption elsewhere to another country, for instance, that doesn't have the same regulation. There's no way around it. So you embrace the disruption. You understand what your new role might be within this disruptive universe. And then as a huge global society, we begin to talk about the ethical implications. Super soldiers, we help paraplegics with bionic exoskeletons and people whose limbs have been blown off, and the military is going to develop soldiers that can wear these exoskeletons. There's no way around it. So do we need to change the rules of warfare? Do we need to reconsider whether war is necessary at all? And these are the kinds of things that we need to have discussions about, not halting the technology. Yeah. There's no way. Yeah. You mentioned jobs. So let's talk about that for a second. In 2015, I was with Singularity. We were doing a summit in Shanghai. And a colleague of mine, Neil Jacobstein, said to me, and he's one of our AI faculty, he said, "Are you worried, Divya, that in the next 10 years you will be obsolete and replaced by an AI?" And I was really deeply offended. And I said, how could you even say that? I mean, what I do is so creative. You know, I said, you know, as a physician, I would feel like my job is fairly intact. I mean, tens of thousands of patients, and I developed this sort of sixth sense about what's happening, what's going on. And then he says, you know, no offense was meant by this. My wife is a surgeon, you know, but personally, I think you're all out of a job soon. And I thought about this and I thought about it. And then when I was back in the operating room, I started thinking about what I was doing for my patients and how I was detecting that things might be going wrong or how to intervene. And I realized I have tens of thousands of patients I've taken care of. I am a network, neural net, and I am basically, I am training on a huge data set, just like a machine would, using a deep neural net. And these are just algorithms. I'm just learning, and the difference between a human brain and what we interpret machines do is, we don't get that, we feel so human as we're doing things. We don't realize that we're developing algorithms and pattern recognition, and that is what we have endowed these deep neural nets with. And once they start training on tens of thousands of patients, they will develop the same thing that we call intuition. And then I said, cognitively, I am going to be disrupted. Now, do I think a machine can intubate a patient? Do I think they can put in invasive lines in people's arteries and the veins in their neck? And I said, yeah, probably yes.
But can they care? Can they care?
Yes. So it's a very good question. Here's what machines can do. They can not get tired when they're sleep deprived because they have an unlimited supply of energy when you plug them into a wall. You can't plug me into a wall. And after 24 hours of caring for patients, I get tired.
And a Red Bull doesn't fix that necessarily.
No, and they don't sell it in the hospital cafeteria. Maybe they should. But what I'm trying to say is that humans are liable, just like a pilot could make an error if they're up too long. A human physician can as well. In some bizarre way, you might feel more comfortable having a machine take care of you because that machine is not going to make an error because of sleep deprivation. there are cognitive overload errors. There is too much information coming in.
Sure.
Machines aren't going to have that issue.
Those problems now.
So in a really sort of strange way, I have to admit that maybe care by machine could be superior, and that the physicians of the future are going to be just compassionate givers of support, empathy. Mm. Yes, yeah. Delivering bad news, coaching people to wellness, helping them overcome habits.
But I think also just coming back to your point about jobs, because people are alarmed by all of this. I think that the realities around this also is it's moving really rapidly, but there's still so much to learn and so much to do that it's not like next year you're suddenly going to be without a job. And I think that's the sort of realism for some folks is that the coexistence of machine and man is still going to be around for a long, long time, probably beyond our lifetime, unless, of course, we have the...
I don't know. How long is our lifetime?
Yeah, that's
right?
The thing, right?
Is that
unless
another
we're suddenly episode? Hitting 300 years.
Yeah, what does the professional say?
Yeah, I mean, so the question is, you know, the imminent impact, you know, how real is that? So is it imminent, or are we looking at this is something that is happening quickly, but probably still a long way off from the sort of utopian you're discussing now?
So, for instance, if we break that down, machines taking over our jobs might be one piece of that, right? Mm-hmm. And the second is whether or not there will be a harmonic interaction between human and machine. Let me take that latter question first. You know, if you think about these humans who have lost nervous system function or have lost limbs, and we have already interfaced them with machines, that's an example of beautiful harmony between human and machine. And I actually think that, in general, humans would do well to partner with AIs. Your average physician, whether they're telling you this or not when you go see them, if what you come in with is not standard, they're looking you up on the internet, but they go to different databases. Mm-hmm. They
not Google.
No. They go to peer-reviewed literature. They go to other sources of medical data. By the way, there's new crowdsourcing out for physicians. A physician, let's say I'm in the United States and somebody comes to our emergency room and has this very bizarre infectious disease, and it turns out it's a tropical infectious disease that we don't see very often. You might do better to contact a physician that's, say, in an equatorial country where that disease is prevalent. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of sort of mass interconnected brain that even physicians can form. Mm. And now if we can form that with machines, whether we do it invasively or not, we would probably also deliver better care.
Yeah.
I'll admit that, invasively or not, the sonic discussion you had around controlling
the
neurons.
Controlling worms, yeah.
Yes, it's insane. And that's insane.
That's another topic. And unfortunately, I think we're running out of time. And an amazing, beautiful mind. I would want to talk to you some more and for a lot longer. But before we leave and we let you run back into the Singularity Summit, what would be your one piece of advice to people that maybe have a fear for the future?
If you have a fear of the future, you just must embrace it, like you do everything that you are afraid of. Look, we are not going to be replaced by technology. Only the things, in some sense, that are actually not good for us, that are repetitive, that hurt us, will be automated away. And in the end, imagine this, that we free up the human race for more time for leisure activity, for exploration, for spiritual pursuits, for kindness and love.
Yeah, the age of experience is going to be real.
Would it be better to be working in a field or a coal mine versus developing systems for interconnectedness and love of other humans? I don't think so. And so there are ways to get around, by the way, this fear of survival. What if we were to develop universal basic incomes?
Yeah.
Right. Solve that.
Get to that point the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
Solve this problem some other way. There's enough resources.
Yeah.
Humans don't need to live, you know, this horrible fettered existence because machines arrive or because AI arrives or because we automate. Humans can live a much more human existence the arrival of machines. And we can all learn to love each other as kindred spirits. I really think there's more opening for our spiritual development.
Absolutely.
I love you, Brent.
I love you too.
There we go.
I think so. Brett Sinclair has a man crush, love crush wall, and I'm pretty sure, and we all do actually. I think you're going to be very much.
I think you're on our man crush, person crush, wall.
Person crush wall. So, Dr. Divya Tranja, thank you so much for your time today. We very much look forward to talking to you again in the future, and enjoy the rest of Singularity Summit.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Are you still high?
Just a bit.
That was Dr. Vivian Chanda that you just listened to. And that was Brett still recovering from this.
That's so funny.
Shame. I apologize for this entire episode, even our little in bits between. Are you all right now, Brett? Have you come back down to earth?
Sure, we had fun.
It's amazing when you do things live, hey?
Did you find the mothership whilst you were away?
I don't know.
So, Brett, did you enjoy that? I mean, are you back to earth as well?
Dude, like, I must admit, my whole thinking has kind of changed. When we started talking about the whole remapping my synapses, because we've been training our minds to do something for so long, and actually that's probably a bad thing. We need to continually break them and then reassemble.
Yeah.
And I just... Every day you start realizing, damn, we've got to do different experiences, live life differently.
I'm stuck in conformity.
It's beautiful.
And it's a hard one, though, isn't it? It really is.
But sorry.
No, I was just going to say, that's the big challenge of the 21st century is to unlearn.
Yeah.
Unlearn.
And that's what the thing is. I mean, we're going through exponential and disruptive change. And the biggest thing to accept a lot of the time is the fact that sometimes we have to change.
Actually, I just want to do a little pun for Craig Wing. He has a great keynote on unlearning.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, he really spends a lot of time. If you cannot do LSD or mushrooms, and I do not suggest you do that, then just go watch him on YouTube. He's got a phenomenal presentation on that.
Have you done LSD or mushrooms?
No, I haven't.
I've done rooibos.
Rooibos?
That's about the closest I get to any sort of herbal.
I don't know. And the last rose, darling, is for you. I'm a Five Roses.
Oh, you're a Five Roses.
Yes, your poor wife.
Oh,
your poor wife.
But
I mean, if that's how gushy you're getting with Brecher, I mean, can you imagine poor Martha?
I had to break those synapses to start that new journey of thinking.
In fact, I got to tell you a funny, I don't know if you saw Brett's post on Facebook the other day. He actually thanked his wife for putting up.
That was very gushy.
But did you see the comments?
It was beautiful. It was beautiful.
But did you see the humor in the
comments? I had Vivaldi going in the background while I was reading it. I was like,
No, but did you see the comments?
I didn't read comments. I never read comments. I don't care what other people think.
You've actually got to go read the comments because it was like, well, Brett, what have you done now? What have you broken?
Have you just bought a boat, Brett?
You just bought a boat. So,
thanks, guys. Thanks for all the faith in the world while I try to be romantic.
Cupboard love.
Yeah, anyway, coming back to singularity, I mean, to Jaya. I mean, what was your highlight? Because this was the last interview of the day, so...
I think singularity end to end was my highlight. And the fact that we got to do these shows has just lengthened that experience for me somewhat. And I'm so grateful for that opportunity. But Jaya is she's not just a presence. She's a force.
She is a force. Yeah.
Machine. And, I mean, she's that whole, her thinking around quantum. When she was explaining to us how qubits worked with overlays or interlaces.
Yeah.
And
one and zero, not one or one zero.
And, one and zero at the same time. And the interlacing four. Upwards. And it's not just exponential. It's the exponential of exponential.
Yeah.
And did you understand it?
No.
But you know what the scary thing is? That we don't understand it. And the truth is, and we allude to it in the interviews, that we don't need to. The three of us don't necessarily need to.
As long as Jaya understands
people,
it, it'll be
fun. People need to. Big corporates and big enterprises and banks and institutions that have lots of information that they need to keep secure need to be paying attention, because somewhere the hackers and the nefarious beings on the digital underground, they know this.
Okay. Well, I was just about to ask you. So let's just rather listen to Jaya rather than...
She says it a lot better than
she
we do.
She says, with a lot more sense.
Yes.
Because you're still looking a bit dumbfounded.
Yeah, but you still have the two of us to deal with as well. So enjoy this next interview.
I'm going to send these two out to go find the giraffe now.
Hey, Futurology listeners. You are still listening to The Futurology Show, and for that, we have to thank you.
Brett and Brett say hi again.
Yes, and we are still at the Singularity Summit in South Africa, and it is... fantastic.
It is fantastic. I was about to say, it's as good as giraffe sex.
It is as good as it can get. And my brain is so beaten up, it's as violent as giraffe sex. Now, the amount of technology that is thrown into my head is crazy. But as we said in the pre-prep on this, that's probably one squirrel too far. So we're going to bring it back a little bit.
Yes.
And we have one of the most dynamic speakers from the Singularity University Summit this year, and at least for me anyway. Jaya Ballou?
Yes.
Welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome. We are so excited.
We are.
I'm so going to let you guys down. All right.
No, you are not.
No, okay. The build-up.
You're not. Yep. Can I just make an attempt at SU member and with
no,
the fact like, I can't
you
even
failed
say
already.
failed. Quantum computing and security. Guys, those are two of the most crazy, complex things.
It's not just security.
In my little
it's
mind.
It's quantum security.
It's quantum security, right?
Yeah.
That's mind-blowing.
Yeah.
But now the title blows your mind. Wait until you hear the concept, because I heard you talk, and I was, in all honesty, I was a little scared. I don't really have a lot to be scared of, because I'm not a bank, I'm not an MVNO, I don't have a lot of users, millions or whatever, that I have to be responsible for.
Mm-hmm. What about the show?
Yeah. You guys are listening. I hope you're secure after this, and if you're not, then we'll chat later. But I really hope that a lot of the people that were listening in those positions understood the topic of your conversation. And without giving it all away, tell us who you are, tell us what you do, and why we should be scared.
Well, I'm happy to tell. So I'm the Chief Information Security Officer of KPN Telecom, which is kind of like the telecom, except with maybe better service, in the Netherlands. Am I supposed to say that?
No.
I hope they're
trust
not a sponsor.
Me, much better.
So, okay.
Sorry, telecom.
So it's the telecom incumbent provider in the Netherlands, and I do information security for them. And I've been doing that for them for the last 5 years. They got hacked about 5 years ago by a 15-year-old kid.
No way.
Thank you for my job.
Exactly,
and,
right.
You know,
do you hire lots of 15-year-old kids?
No, only if they're really, really good. Jeez. And but I have several teams, and I also have a team of hackers, and I also have a team of defenders, and I have strategy and policy people, and you know, it's a total of 50 people. So
pick me. Are you a white hat?
We are all between white and gray, because somewhere near Gondor. If I could describe myself, I really love security. I really believe in the getting the basics right, but doing it for not a lot of money. So I really believe in doing it for an effective response, but not breaking the bank. You know?
Wow.
Yeah.
Can I get a high five?
Yeah.
We need more people like you that are doing amazing things.
It doesn't sound like you work in a telco, because in the bank world, it's like, well, cheap security, nothing.
No, that's
throw also, everything at it.
Yeah, that's because vendors do that to them. But hey, I wanted to go back to something you said, which is like, you know, we're not going to get hacked. Nothing will happen. We just have this radio show and this podcast. I don't know if you heard about it, but if you have time, Google it. A radio station in the United Kingdom got hacked a while ago. I think it was recently, earlier this summer. And the hackers, they hijacked the radio station. And on the playlist, all they played was "I'm a Wanker" the whole time.
Really?
And it happened like 3 times. Every time the radio station got hacked again, and they played the "I'm a Wanker" song.
So that's not going to work.
Little kids in the car with their moms were singing "I'm a Wanker."
Well, I don't think that's going to be too much of a problem, because but Gareth actually plays that song voluntarily. You know what I mean? Like, so that's probably why we're not really going to get hacked anytime soon. Well, and if they do, we'll probably just want to interview them anyway.
Yeah, true. Like, so well in. Done. And okay, fair enough. But that could be a good reason.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
Just to get the airtime. But I think one of the fundamental things that I tried to convey in my talk, I don't know if it came through, was that mentality, they're not after me.
It
won't happen to me. That is not true. It is not a matter of if it happens to you or not. It's just a question of when and if you know about it.
Yes.
So have you ever checked your email addresses on Have I Been Pwned?
If you do that, don't you get pwned?
Signed up and get pwned? Yeah.
No.
So often I worry about that. Check my email address. Yeah, here we go. Thanks for your email address. Just pop your password in there.
No,
Okay, so what is the address?
Have I Been Pwned? P-W-N-E-D.
Yeah.
And it's set up by security researcher Troy Hunt, who basically takes, you know, a whole bunch of, like if a botnet has been compromised and dumped, that he takes all the information and he like looks for usernames, email addresses, and password combinations.
And then it tells you whether you're clean or not.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. We should probably do that.
Yeah,
let's try that.
Okay, let's do it. One
thing we have been doing at our offices anyway, and I don't know whether it was through curiosity or concern, but we on our one screen, we got a 55-inch screen in the office, and it's been showing us the DDoS attacks for the last
last
3 weeks.
From the digital attack map?
Yes.
And we've been watching it going, holy shit.
Yeah.
Once you start to realize it. And
glad I'm not China and U.S. It's just full on war.
Dudes, I also follow like BGP hijacking.
Yeah.
So BGP is a border gateway protocol. It's like the basis for all internet routing between gateway routers, connecting networks to each other. And what's really scary, take a look at how often, just this summer, North Korea has been hijacked.
No
really.
Way. No, that is scary. They have nuclear missiles.
That's why, I'm telling you, it's terrifying. If you actually, peel back the onion and take a look, it's terrifying. But it's also the truth. And We seem to ignore it.
Do you not think that it's sort of the global chaos drawer? You know, in every house there's a chaos drawer. There's that one drawer that everybody just throws all this shit in and like hopes to forget about it. And you, as you do, you're like, yeah, we'll figure it out later. And I'm moving house at the moment, and I have to deal with this chaos drawer.
So you have many chaos drawers?
No, but one specific chaos drawer. But don't you think that this, I'm using it anecdotally, but it could potentially be the security becomes our chaos drawer, where it's just like...
I love that analogy.
It's just there, and we're just going to put it in, and like, I'll deal with it when it happens, but when it happens...
I'll do it later, because I'm moving now. I just got a new puppy. I have to clean my teeth. I don't know.
Hasta mañana.
Yeah.
We'll wait till tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah.
So I'd actually like to know, how does quantum computing
work?
Fit in?
Yeah, so I can actually explain this in 60 seconds, okay? Yes. So, first of all, a regular computer works with bits. Oh my God, you're timing me. A regular computer works with bits. A quantum computer works with qubits, which means that a regular computer can be, you know what a bit is, it's binary. It can be a zero or a one. However, a quantum computer can be in the same relative position, a zero and a one at the same time.
Schrodinger's cat for bites.
For example, dead and alive, yeah. But the cool thing with quantum computers and the reason that it gives it scale is this principle called entanglement. Mm-hmm. Entanglement was referred to by Einstein as spooky action at a distance because it meant like the Brett and Brett, if I could use you. So if Brett here is in, you know, a particular orientation, the other Brett is in a different orientation. But together, you know, they're always in a state of like a unique bond of relationship
across bromance,
you know, the fisting, the whole shebang, but across the length of the universe, all right? So distance is not a thing. And the reason that Einstein didn't like this, because he said, hey, look, violates this idea that something will travel faster than the speed of light.
Yes.
So don't like it. It's all spooky shit.
Really?
Don't like it. Yeah.
Excuse me.
So the quantum computer takes advantage of this entanglement because let's say you're entangling two qubits. Mm-hmm. Then you've got a zero and a one, a zero and a one. If you entangle four qubits, you've got a zero and one, a zero and a one, a zero and a one, a zero and a one in the same spot that you used to have a zero or
and
a one.
Oh, I didn't understand that part.
But
now
I've
you
got
do.
This, I've got
That's
this
mind-blowing.
I've got this annoying feeling that I'm going to be sick in my mouth just now. Because
you always are.
No, but because
because
of the truth and the fact that you're about to bring out. Like if you can see what this becomes,
exponentially
just
large.
Now, like because the whole world is sort of happy with ones and zeros. We're okay.
We just got that. Yeah. We basically just understood that concept.
Ones and zero, and now you're telling me that quantum exists and it happens in the same place and can be either or.
And the entanglement part.
Either and.
And. And then so, all across the thing. So if you have
explain that to the people that don't understand what I know.
Yeah. So, like, but then if you have 16 qubits, it's like, it's that hockey stick again. It's that exponential thing again. But it goes from a place where you had, like, this minimal amount of processing power because we keep talking about Moore's Law. Mm. But at a certain point, you hit, like, a sort of, you know, sliding scope where you can keep adding processors, but you don't keep increasing your computing power. And you're talking about Amdahl's Law.
Right.
Yeah. So it's just going to peter down. You know, it's petering away. And in order to fix that and to solve problems, like, you're not going to get a quantum computer as a laptop. Let me just first disabuse everyone of that notion.
I just don't have a cool enough room.
That too.
It's not affordable yet.
No, and it requires, if they're not physical qubits, it requires like a supercomputer to do quantum error correction.
Okay.
So
it's a different type of coding environment, right?
So but also, it will require new software, and you can actually get a piece on a quantum computer if you want now, because one of the companies that's actually made it public is IBM, and they've actually made a public quantum computer available for all of us. You can just go and get an account and tell your friends.
Who would have thought IBM would have done that? Can I just check something?
Yeah.
So if I get, I always use the analogy of exponential being, you know, the steps 1 to 30.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get to 30, when you're exponential, it's 1,400,000,000
that's right.
Something.
Because you're doubling every time.
You're doubling every time.
Yeah.
So 16 would be half of that. If I kind of figure
well,
out.
No,
but
like
it's the same kind of progress, right?
Yes, but it's like a delinear.
You're only thinking one bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now
yes,
you've
got
to think about
that's why I'm trying
all
to
of the possible bits that exist. Okay, so
that's huge.
We're going to geek out on things that we probably, you and I are kind of familiar with some of the background. Let's break it down.
Yeah.
What does it mean today
For security?
For people listening, yeah.
Okay, well, yes. Here's the deal, right? We all use cryptography in our daily lives. If you've ever done e-banking or whatever, it's not actually the same thing. It's just that having a quantum computer, the strategic advantage you would have if you had one, would mean that you could break a lot of our public key cryptography that we use today.
For the number of attempts at trying to decrypt
it,
right?
Yeah, so the way that cryptography works, right, our cryptography is based on this like principle of having difficult math problems, what we call one-way functions. That means that it's harder to do in one direction than to do in the other. I'll give you an example. What is 8 times 9? Oh, guys, come on.
Brain broken.
Guys.
No, you were looking at the other brain. 72.
Okay, fine. 72,
that was me.
Very good.
She was looking at me and yes. My mind broke.
This is the easy part of the one-way function. All right, so
he's
72.
He's my counterpart.
Yes, okay, thank you. Now, so we just said, 9 times 8 is 72. But if I asked you for all the factors that would lead us to 72, mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Oh, wow. 63, 54. Am I doing the factors?
No,
oh,
I don't know what you're doing.
I'm going backwards by 8.
No, that's not.
Oh, shit. All the factors of 72.
All the numbers that you can multiply by each other to get 72. So let's start with 1 and 72.
Yeah.
And then 2 and
36. Yeah.
And then
3 and...
But you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. We're not 12. Good at this.
No, but no. Neither is a computer.
Brain's broken.
Oh, wow.
So a regular computer is also not good at this. And this problem is called integer factorization. Mm-hmm. So our current cryptography is based on this as one of the fundamental math problems.
And that fundamentally flawed.
Well, it's flawed when it meets a quantum computer, because that's when the rubber hits the road, because the quantum computer is going to be able to try all the permutations to figure out integer
factorization. But it's theory at the moment, because we aren't yet coding on it.
No.
In theory, we could do that.
Yes,
right?
When we have a viable quantum computer with enough qubits, it will be able to solve these kinds of problems. Okay, right now, it's nowhere near that, but I mean, it will be.
For all of our listeners, again, and I feel sorry that, because I don't know how many of them are picking up what we're putting down.
Right.
And I think this is a big problem when it comes to security.
Yes.
Is that there is a lot of data, a lot of people's data, a lot of your personal things. You've got your stuff in Dropbox and you've got your stuff in everywhere. Well, maybe not you, but...
All on G Drive.
Okay, I'm talking to
I'm a Googler. I'm all on G Drive. I'm sorry, why do you always pick up me like
can
this?
Can I get a path? Can I get a path?
Never on iPhone.
There are people out in the world that are using vulnerable repositories for a lot of their information.
Yeah, not good.
They're putting their credit cards. Because they'll take a photo of their credit card and they'll send it to their wife or their mom or something and say, there you go. It's here you go. Have my thing so you can buy the gift for Jimmy.
No such thing as image recognition either, right?
Yeah, right. I know.
But we're ignorantly accepting all of the things that are in front of us just because they're in front of us without giving it a second thought as to what it means to be using it.
Yeah.
Now, if you have dived headlong into this pool of amazing vulnerability, you need to know that you are vulnerable.
Yes.
But we don't. And you call all of us sheeples.
Yeah, sheeple. Well, it's not just my word. I think I borrowed it from someone.
I agree with sheeple. Because we all just do because my friend did or my mom did. Or
so therefore, I'm
we
safe.
Don't think. And, for example, I think Dropbox is a great example, but so is Google Drive and all the other things. We want free. We like free. But I don't think that we realize that we pay
what
with our privacy.
What the cost is. Yes.
No, the cost is our privacy.
Yeah.
And I think, if you don't pay for a product, you are the product. Mm. And privacy is not about, the people, they drive me freaking crazy. The ones that say, I've got nothing to hide, they can see everything I've got.
I'd take it as a privilege if they had to look into me.
Yeah, it's nonsense because the clue is everyone has something to hide.
Yeah.
And privacy is not about not having something to hide. It's just about you being able to determine what it is you want to reveal to whom. No one has the authority to, de facto take everything you've got and determine how they want to use it. And that is what they do when you get those free products.
And my bigger problem with it is my privacy is what their profitability is based
on.
And they literally are living off thousands and thousands of percentage of margin because they're getting it for free. Oh, yeah, but we have to have some software engineers to build the code. But the scale of it is that how much you turn my privacy over, the amount of profit... Where's my kickback?
Yeah. Well, so there's people and there's companies. When you take a look at cloud stuff especially, right, ask yourself this. Does your cloud provider if you're using, and I won't name all the big names, but you can figure them out.
Google, Amazon Web Services, and Microsoft Azure.
Yes. Yes.
And by the way, I pay for mine. I just want to stay. I pay for it. Yeah. So if Google's abusing my privacy,
but those
I will have a shot.
And I think it's important for people to know this.
But not a lot of them, especially when you're using the office environments, allow you. There are these concepts of, you know, key management, like your encryption key. So most of them will not let you hold it and manage it by yourself.
I'd just like to say, as a Googler, Google does allow you to manage your own encryption key on its cloud.
Is that good or bad?
I don't know, but do they have access to the key?
They no, they don't. They can't change or do anything with the key. You get to manage your own key. They're the only cloud provider that does that.
But do you have to give them the key? Aren't they using it for indexing for, like, Google Office?
Google Office, you mean?
He doesn't.
If you don't know, it's okay. No, no, I'm talking about cloud computing. I'm using cloud computing.
If we talk quiet,
okay,
no one
can catch me out and go, dickhead.
Okay, but guys, I think kind of pointing out who, the majority of them, there are a few that do allow you to do it and don't require to have your key ever. But if they say, you generate the key, you hold it, and we just use it sometimes.
Yeah, actually, maybe you're right. Yeah, I'd love to check that, actually.
It's worth checking.
Because you do feel safe. Yeah, I got it. Yeah.
The context, to get to the nuts and bolts of this, of your talk, which I think was phenomenally frightening, but also a big reality check, was... The context is a lot of people putting a lot of data into a lot of spaces that are vulnerable, and everybody's going, it's okay.
Yeah.
But if everybody's doing it, and there's the good guys and the bad guys, to simplify this, the bad guys are really, really intent on getting all of that free and vulnerable information that we're all just willingly putting into the atmosphere.
And the ability to do it is getting easier
and cheaper.
And cheaper, that's right. And what you see is, because we can't tell who's who, what we see is they all kind of look like each other, you know? Mm-hmm. I wish we could have, like, nice little, you know, you asked me if I was a white hat. I wish we could have, like, nice little color-coded schemes where it could be like, all right, there's an individual hacker who's just a kid, there is the cyber criminal, there is the hacktivist, and there is the state-sponsored attacker. Yeah. And
very clearly. Yeah, I adopt you that.
Yeah, but they
community.
Look like each other, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, if you're going to be a professional espionage CIA-like agent, and if you need to get access to physical property, you're going to make it look like a break-in. So I think that the state-sponsored actors are just going to follow the modus operandi of the other groups in order to cover their tracks.
I mean, you've got some great case studies, and unfortunately we can't get into them all today, but I mean, you've got some great case studies that you shared, and if anybody's interested, they must definitely get in touch or try and follow up with yourself, Jayabaloo. What's the best way to do that?
Twitter,
at?
Jayabaloo.
Fantastic. Jayabaloo.
Good. Which, by the way, is actually quite a special moment because it's the first time Brett's been able to get an at
handle correct.
Handle correct.
On the show.
On the show ever.
Why?
It's a lie. It's a lie. It's just a little weakness.
Handle it on the hashtag thingy.
The big real world problem for the future, because this is Summit, Singularity U Summit. The big
You're
real
so
world problem.
Both of you.
Yeah,
I have to say, I need to have your pictures. Oh, bro fisting again. Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Would you call it bro fisting?
Bro fisting.
Right?
But amidst all this crazy and romantic relationship, there is some serious things. The banks and the big and the governments and all these places where our really sensitive information is being stored are as vulnerable as we are as private people.
Probably more so because they have a more complex distributed infrastructure with less overall visibility, asset management, and clue.
And they're a much nicer
target. Wow, you have just summarized what it feels like to be talking to my CIO, who's very clear of this.
You're not going to get fired after he doesn't listen to this podcast?
I've only got 2 more weeks
left.
Okay,
all right, smart.
Well, I'll at least still be on the show in a couple of weeks' time. So, but that's the thing. They're a very attractive attack point or target for the hackers.
Didn't you guys have a case actually here in South Africa where there was an attack on your educational institution and also that Rhino issue?
I think so.
I'm not familiar enough about it, but there are always attacks.
Yeah.
The truth is that because these big establishments are being targeted and their security is weak, the costs now, because of all the multitudes of humans that are on board, the cost to actually secure it at some level of efficacy is too expensive.
It's not too expensive. It's very expensive for them.
It's challenging, right?
Yeah, but guys, let's look at the real cost. Like, exactly. We were talking about WannaCry, right?
Yeah.
You know, you guys have heard about WannaCry. I'm sure you've talked about it in depth and ad nauseum.
No.
You haven't? Okay.
Nope. I heard about it when you said it, and I did some research after you said it.
Yeah.
And I still don't know exactly what they do.
Okay, so let's rewind a bit, okay? Everybody outsources. Mm. Everybody outsources. It's like the name of the game today. And so does the NSA. So the NSA needs to find ways to break in. So when people have their security in order, they need to find a way to break through that security. And here's the deal. Like, especially on crappy platforms, they engineer new vulnerabilities. And there's new vulnerabilities that nobody knows about for like 0 days.
Organization.
Yeah, and they're called 0 days. And the NSA finds groups to help them write these 0 days. And what they did was they found a group called the Equation Group to write them a 0 day. And Equation Group didn't have their own security on order.
Oh, shit.
Got hacked by the shadow brokers, or a group calling themselves the shadow brokers, you know, who the U.S. government says is North Korea, who knows, or the Russians, I don't know. And the clue was that the shadow brokers then said, okay, we don't have this one vulnerability. We've got a ton of vulnerabilities. We're going to release a sample set to make sure you guys all feel how potent this stuff is. That was last year. And then what they did was they said, but the rest of it, now you know the stuff is real. And we saw Cisco, Microsoft, everyone updating their stuff once the shadow brokers had done that little taste test. And after they had done that, they said, all right, now it's up for auction. Starting price, $10 million.
Of course.
Yeah, and you know people paid.
Yeah, yeah.
But because they're such ginormous trolls, and they're so cool with the way that they did this, actually, I have to be honest, like props, respect. What they did was they then actually released MS-1710, Eternal Blue, which is, you know, WannaCry. And they just released it out into the wild. And, you know, you saw that Microsoft... Probably.
And then made it open source.
Exactly. It's total. Anyway, so what they did was when they released that, you know, and Microsoft had already had a patch, we were following it and we had immediately applied the patch and we were examining the code and we took out the NSA code. We put it on ExploitDB so that it was available to other people. But WannaCry was made for our enjoyment globally by the NSA. And if that doesn't blow your mind, I don't know what will. It cost Maersk, who's a global shipping company, 250 million euros.
Wow.
So tell me, the cost to update all of their... was not going to be that much.
And actually, it's going to get worse with Internet of Things and more connectivity, more things taking control.
Internet of shit.
Internet of shit.
That's what it is. And you made a great point that all these hardware and software vendors have got to stop putting the onus on the user to be in charge of their security and actually start owning it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, they're building all of our crap. And, like, that's – I think the legislation really needs to catch up because in the EU, they have this thing called the NIS directive, which says everybody's got to be responsible, you know, like the banking sector, the telecom, the transport, blah, blah, healthcare, governments. But who's exempt, like actually exempt? They wrote down exempt from this? Hardware and software vendors.
The guys it's all built on.
Who meant to be responsible for this? That's
it's insane. No, it's just a good lobby. It's just a good lobby in Brussels, but it's insanely wrong. It's it's just wrong.
My mind is blown and probably will stay that way until something actually changes. But
I'll give you a hug.
And that's cool. That'll be great. Later.
Okay.
China has got a quantum...
satellite. They've got a quantum satellite and a 2,000-kilometer quantum key distribution network from Shanghai to... big network.
And they say it's to do what?
To protect communications in the event of a regional war.
A regional internal war. Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. So if that's not a big enough sign to say, let's shake it up a little bit and let's start thinking better and bigger about the security requirements we need in today's living, especially the more digital we go... Yeah. Then I don't know what is.
You know, I was watching the news today and I understood that the government wanted to think about selling their shares in Telkom, South Africa, in order to delay the potential.
Payment.
Yeah, exactly. To offset that.
Yeah,
you know, and this is another critical flaw in the thinking of governments, to give over control of your critical national infrastructure. If you give your Telkom to the hands of a foreign entity or put it up for sale where you no longer have control, you're basically creating the cascade.
You're giving the wheel of the car to the blind
blind guy.
It's insane. You are allowing
just
that telecom infrastructure. Yeah, but to fail, then the water systems will fail. Then the electricity systems will fail. It will just be the master switch.
You're saying that it hasn't already. You know, that's the thing. We can blame it on infrastructure. We can blame it on something else.
Yeah.
So, so what is Mauritius like?
I firmly believe it's a floating rock. Both of those.
Sunny or rainy outlook on the future?
I'm a positive person. Yeah. You know, I want to believe good. I have that dark side that keeps telling me, like, that's bullshit. It's all going to suck. We're screwed. We're so screwed.
So just smile and wave, boys.
But so I just want us to get ready, and I want the information security community to understand the nature of the challenge, because the NIST group in the United States already put out a call for a new post-quantum algorithm. I think that's really great. But before vendors integrated into hardware and software, and we actually have it as a viable up and running thing after the candidate selection, blah, 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 we're going to be busy for a while.
Well, sure. I really look forward to the opportunity to talk to you again. I really think it's important that we talk to you again.
Thank you.
And thanks for the time and for the opportunity to meet you.
It was lovely to be part of this bromance, even briefly.
Fist bumps. All right. They're called fist bumps.
No, they're
just
not.
To get you
warm.
Bro-fisting.
Here we go. On that note, this is the Futurology Show. We are at the Singularity U Summit in South Africa, and we're talking to a bunch of crazy and amazing people. Cremazing people.
Cremazing.
And on that note,
cremation.
We're out.
Are you boys all right? That was a really good show.
That was power.
I mean, yeah, she's just phenomenal. But,
I'm just gonna give Mike a bro fist.
Bro fist. Bro fist. We're having a little threesome in the studio here, bro-fisting each other.
It's absolutely cremazing.
Cremazing.
Crazy, amazing people. We've started something. Hashtag cremazing.
Exactly.
Hashtag cremazing. What about what Mike said?
Sorry. We always do that.
You've lost it. You've lost it.
Have I lost it? Well, you know what? I'm happy to lose it after these amazing interviews, because keep up with these brains, these people. I mean, imagine living in a world like that. But guys, we've got one more session to go.
Yeah.
Then Singularity is over for this year.
Yeah. So. And coming up next week, we're going to be talking to, we've got Mr. Brett Loebscher, who was at Singularity, who came and joined us. And again, we were just talking, expanding on that discussion we had with him around sapiens.
And he's a local big thinker,
right?
Oh,
my goodness. It was really cool. And we've got access to brains like that in our country and changing business where we are, which is great. We also spoke to another local who wants to be a non-local, completely out of this world person, Adriana Marais.
Forever.
Yes.
Forever. Yeah, she forever.
She wants to go to Mars.
Yeah. We've just got her down here as a Mars chick. But she literally is a really interesting human being.
And phenomenally intelligent.
Yeah.
Jeez. She knows her stuff.
She knows her stuff. I wonder if she's ever going to get to Mars.
Well, according to Elon Musk, it's getting closer. 2024, he's sending people to Mars.
You know what? Well, you know what? Kind of when he says something, it tends to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, he has yet to fail on a promise.
It's a bit like you, Mike.
What can I say?
Yeah, that's why we love you, man.
I'm not too sure where you're going here.
Oh, it's going to take it somewhere. But
no, I could see your face there.
But it's the end of this show, and the beginning of the next show will bring us all of those things, and Carla van der Veyer talking about the future of mobility. That is a very entertaining conversation, and I really enjoyed that. So until next week, guys, this is the Futurology Show. Thanks for listening.
Ciao.
Cheers.
This is CliffCentral.com.